A podcast of the cinema.
Welcome home.
Thank you. It's nice to be home.
Sorry. Welcome home, co-host Alonzo Duralde of The Rap.
Thank you, Dave White of The Rap.
And also the co-host of this show.
And co-host of the show.
And also your legally wedded spouse.
That's all correct.
My greatest credit. My greatest resume line item.
You bury the lead.
Successfully.
Ensnared.
Ensnared. We've used that word a few times in the past month. It's going to become canon if we don't watch out.
Okay.
Because let's just be clear about who approached who.
Okay, fine.
Whomst decided, I'm beginning to like that Dave White.
I just watched most of The Circle on Netflix. I've seen all of it, but I watched most of it with my sister in Tacoma, which is where I was over the weekend and why we're delayed in getting this show out. And I had to explain to her the concept of catfishing.
You had to explain catfishing to your sister?
Yes.
And she'd never heard of it?
She'd never heard of it.
She'd never heard of the film?
Nope.
Or the popular television program?
Nope.
Or the now common practice, apparently, among so many people on the internet, of pretending to be a thing, a radically different thing than they actually are.
The thing that she found distracting about The Circle was the lying.
What are you talking about?
And my, the people who were pretending to be somebody else. And I was like, well,
that's part of the game.
I said, A, this is reality television, and B, it's about social media. So that's kind of a thing.
Yeah. I mean, she's not on social media.
Not much.
What do you mean, not much?
I mean, she has a Facebook account.
Okay, that's not social media. Facebook is no longer social media.
I see.
Facebook is
for old people.
How old people in a family or high school friends.
Find each other
and sort of silently tolerate one another.
Always judging.
Like, if it weren't for the fact that I have, a significant number of people from back in the day in my life, I wouldn't be on Facebook anymore.
Facebook is... Unfortunately,
so I keep in touch with like my niece and the grandbabies and grandnieces and all that stuff.
Well, my family thankfully has discovered the group text, so that's not so much an issue.
Like, y'all.
We've all got a WhatsApp, and apparently the sisters all have like their own separate one.
My brothers all try to do the group text thing every once in a while.
Uh huh.
It's always my oldest brother who starts it off because he thinks it's all going to be great, and I'm like, this is falling apart in exactly 15 minutes.
But
guess what? I'm right.
If I really mainly stick around Facebook for work stuff. Like it is communicating with the listeners of this program, communicating with the people who are fans of my Christmas movie book, communicating with the people who are the Patreon followers of Deck the Hallmark, who I'm collaborating with on my next book.
Right.
Like there's too much of that happening for me to walk away from it. But I constantly want to walk away from it.
It's just there's nothing going. Nothing happens on Facebook anymore. Forgive me. Yet another cough lozenge in my mouth.
Yes.
This cough will go away by 2021,
and that's a guarantee.
And I'm bound and determined that that is the case.
So you're saying when you say social media, you mean Instagram and Twitter?
Yeah.
Okay.
Instagram is for like having fun with your friends and showing dumb pictures of things to them,
and faking your best life
and an annual selfie. Mine will happen in May of this year because that was when my last one happened in 2019.
I had a
selfie.
I drag you into selfies on Linoleum Cast occasionally.
That doesn't count.
And they blow up.
It doesn't count. The selfies that you drag me into do not count because it's always against my will. And
you can see it in your face.
And so the, even the ones I've taken of myself for my face is my face. I'm happy. you might not look at it on my face and think, oh, that's a happy person. No, but I'm happy.
Right. But there's a definite unhappy face that you have. And you usually give it to me when I make you do a selfie for a little
bit. Yeah, it's this. What was I talking about? Oh, Twitter social is really media. Twitter's the best thing of social media because it's the most outraged and alarmed and angry and fighting,
right?
And people sending out bad tweets that are poorly constructed and therefore open to so much misinterpretation when, you know, a qualifying word or two or even a comma would have made it a different thing.
But
the people who respond are like, bah!
even clear tweets can be aggressively misunderstood.
Yeah.
I've had conversations about this. People were like, somebody says a thing that is pretty straightforward and then it just gets like, pick, 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 pick,
do pick, you
pick.
Mean blah, blah, blah? Yeah. And you're like, no.
No.
And this is the fault of everyone in the world, because no one in the world is good at reading comprehension anymore.
Yeah.
If they ever were. So that's why. But Twitter's number one, even though I'm not on it very much. Instagram is for fun. You just, wait, I'm sorry. We just paused the recording so that you could check a thing and then...
Which is supposed to be an invisible
and then you
thing
said,
in the show.
No, but here's what you just did. You said, okay, let's go. And you pointed at me like, I said, start talking.
I said, carry on.
About what?
You usually have a list in front of you of things, so I'm throwing it to you to take us to whatever the next thing is.
You...
Oh, God. Almost 10 years, y'all. Almost 10 years, this show.
Here's the thing. I'm going to tell everybody a real thing.
Uh-huh.
Normally you say, let's pick up again with blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And I'll say, oh, no, I want you to pick up again with something other. Not often do you just point to me and like, go.
Well,
and I think, go with what?
I thought you had a next idea in mind, because before I stopped you, you were like clearly ending that first bit.
I don't have a next thought most of the time.
In your pretty little head.
So this is, you know... It's all up to you.
I'm not running anything.
You're
here.
The petrol in this engine.
Oh, brother. What would you like to talk about now, Dave White?
Cinema.
Great. I hear this is a podcast of that.
We have seen the latest Guy Ritchie movie.
Yes.
The Gentleman.
Mm-hmm.
Neither of us saw The Turning.
No.
And I'm waiting... Or someone whose opinion I respect on these matters, April Wolf, to tell me that I should see The Turning. Because it got crap reviews.
Yeah.
And here's the enticing part. It got an F cinema score.
Yes.
F cinema scores feel... That makes my antenna prick up. Because
attention must be paid.
Bad reviews are one thing.
Yeah.
But bad audience reviews, most audiences are people who walk into a movie theater, barely know what they're there to see, why they want to see it. They pick it when they show up.
Yeah.
And when it's over, they go, that was fine. Let's go to Chili's. Like, it's...
Cinema score is it's opening night reaction.
Yeah.
And usually opening night people are either like the super fans who ran out to see the movie because they like the star or the genre or the property or whatever. Yeah. Or just like your sort of casual opening night stand at the box office and go, huh, what's starting in the next 20 minutes?
I'm not saying that people who aren't film critics are big dopes.
No.
I'm saying that everyone is a big dope. I think
we take in movies in different ways. And I think there are audience members who go to the theater knowing exactly what they want to see and why. But there are, believe me, we've both worked in movie theater box offices. Yeah. We've seen it a million times.
Yes.
People who just kind of go, what's that one? So that starts in 15 minutes. What's it about? Who's in it?
God, I used to have the best time.
I mean, theaters, if
directing
you go,
people have... to the movie I knew that would drive them crazy.
Oh, you should see Water. Movie theaters, a lot of times...
Obscure film of the 80s, that's yes, all. That's...
Yeah, we'll have a laminated card with, like, plot synopses on them, mm-hmm. and just a hand to people mm-hmm. when they walk up and go, what's The Turning?
Yeah. So anyway, I didn't see The Turning, but that F Cinema score has enticed me in a little way, a small way.
Here's what you and April want from this movie. I don't know if she's seen it yet, but based on a tweet that she made before having seen it.
We want it to be The Little Stranger.
You want it to be The Little Stranger, a movie.
We already had this. She and I had this discussion.
A movie that most film critics in y'all's view didn't get, but y'all did.
I didn't say people didn't get it. I said they didn't love it properly.
The implication is this movie is doing A, and you didn't understand that it's doing A, but I do, and I love
know,
A.
You know me. I never say, oh, no one understood this film but me. I don't do that, and you know I don't do that. Mostly because, who am I?
Well,
other than a licensed professional film critic, yes. to tell you that you don't understand
everybody.
Things.
Everybody wants to be right when other people are wrong. That's just an inescapable human thing.
I suppose that's true. But when it comes to films, I aggressively do not want to be,
the person telling other people that they're
telling
wrong.
Other people that they're wrong.
Admittedly, yes.
It's the most annoying trait in the world.
Yeah, definitely.
Speaking of Twitter.
good example.
I will goof around with my friends and say, you're wrong about this film, blah, blah, blah. Like, right. What were we talking about just yesterday?
No, it was just this morning or something.
No.
Or was yesterday?
Richard Brody and I agreed
The future.
On something.
The future. Miranda July's.
Miranda July's film called The Future that I adored when I wrote my review of it. What was it, 2012?
2011,
2011? And, and just recently, yesterday, I learned that Richard Brody loves that movie as well.
Yeah.
And you hate that movie.
I do.
And so it's one of the biggest sort of disagreements that you and I have had.
I love Me and You and Everyone We Know, but boy, do I hate The Future.
In any case, the only time I want to have that kind of like contentious discussion is with you.
Fair enough.
Yeah. Or our big dope friends.
Well, neither of us have seen the Turning, so we can't have that argument.
Especially Chris Gardner.
Oh, yeah.
Chris Gardner, who's very smart and very cool, no longer trusts me to take him to films, apparently. Unless they're like 4K reissues of Howard's End.
Right. Unless, like, Maggie Smith is wearing a picture hat in it.
We saw Beau Travail, and he was like, ugh. He was like, after this and that donkey movie, I've never... I'm never trusting you again. I was like, fine.
I'm with him. Right. I'm with him on Beau Travail, but you did win me over on O Hazard Balthazar,
the donkey movie.
Yes, not to be confused with the Jesus Lion movie,
or the Baby Yoda show.
Yes.
So, now the cough lozenge is at the crunchy stage.
Oh,
sorry. We also finally we're going to talk about. Two
Oscar-nominated documentaries
that came out in 2019.
Yes.
And that we missed.
Yes.
During their initial, splash.
Mm-hmm.
Honeyland, which we finally got around to watching.
Yes. Double nominee this year.
And American Factory.
Yes.
Yeah. So I'm going to let you explain the plot of The Gentleman.
Oh my God.
Because I must tell you a real thing. When that was over, when The Gentleman ended, and it ends rather abruptly, I might add, I thought to myself, did somebody win? Like, I was following it, obviously, but by the end of it, there was so much like convoluted, interconnected, bad guys and one bad woman trying to, ruin each other or at least just get theirs.
Right. This is an
it's all crime people.
This is an intentionally labyrinthine plot, so I'm going to skim over the surface at best. Hugh Grant is a tabloid reporter who comes to see Charlie Hunnam, who is the lieutenant of Britain's biggest weed grower, played by who else? Matthew McConaughey.
May I just interrupt for just one moment here?
Uh-huh.
You know, I would rather walk a mile on my own lips than mock someone's appearance. What coconut oil is Matthew McConaughey slathering all over his body and hair? Why does he look always greasy now? What is happening with him? No matter where I see him, he has hit the moisturizer extremely hard and the hair goo harder. And I'm thinking, you're like
you're about to swim the channel. It's a fallback look for him. I remember when I reviewed Ghosts of Girlfriends Past, that was the movie, that was the review where I got to refer to him as an oleaginous jackanapes.
Yeah. An oleaginous is making a comeback with him.
He's got
That's all. Yeah.
But didn't he go on Oprah and talk about how he makes his own moisturizers? Or was it deodorant or something? Remember?
Makes his own body creams or something.
Yeah.
I don't remember now what it was. Doesn't make his own anything.
Maybe not now. Anyway.
Rich people have... I've watched the Goop Lab enough this week to know that rich people have other people doing things for
them. Yeah. So we'll be talking about that on LKTV, which is one of our Patreon subscriber shows. More on that later. So Hugh Grant is laying out to Charlie Hunnam all the reasons why... Matthew McConaughey should give him £20 million to shut up and go away because Hugh Grant has unlocked the
story. Why Charlie Hunnam should give him £20 million to
shut up and go away. Charlie Hunnam would be getting the money from Matthew McConaughey.
I understand, but...
Fine. Why the McConaughey organization should be giving him £20 million.
All right.
Because Hugh Grant has been tasked by tabloid editor... that guy.
Eddie Marsan.
Eddie Marsan, thank you. The happy-go-lucky guy.
The Mike Lee guy.
Yes.
Yeah, all right.
By Eddie Marsan to basically take down McConaughey's criminal empire. Mm-hmm. So, like, Hugh Grant knows where the secret farms are. Mm-hmm. He knows the whole,
Yeah.
Meanwhile, McConaughey wants to get out of the business and go legit. And he's looking to sell the whole thing to a billionaire played by Jeremy Strong. With the idea being that within 20 years, weed's going to be legal, and now you'll have, like, the grow labs and the infrastructure, and you'll be ready to hit the ground running as a legal entity, and in the meantime, it'll still make money as a criminal enterprise. Meanwhile, Jeremy Strong is going out of his way to mess up McConaughey's business so that he can buy it off him for a song, which involves hiring Colin Farrell as a boxing coach and his... band of youths to do crimes and whatnot. Mm-hmm. McConaughey is married to Lady Mary, who runs an all-woman mechanic garage, which I totally wanted to see a whole other movie about.
Oh, yeah.
Hugh Grant keeps hitting on Charlie Hunnam. Charlie Hunnam keeps egging him on to tell him more stuff, like grills him a Kobe steak on this beautiful smokeless grill.
That's a Wagyu steak.
Oh, Wagyu, sorry. Come on, yes, man. Sorry. This is a movie where the outfits are on point and the accessories are gleaming.
The everything looks
Yeah, it all wonderful. Looks like a spread in GQ magazine.
Right.
And, you know, eventually...
Even the tracksuits
yes.
on the young crime dudes are like... Like
couture.
Gorgeous, like...
Burberry.
You know, patrician sort of plaids, yeah.
So, you know, there's double crossing and there's... and then Henry Golding is a mobster with the Chinese gangsters who is trying to work his way up in the world and trying to counter-offer on McConaughey's business, but he's, you know, young and hot-headed and makes mistakes.
Yep.
That's, you know, and then kablam kablam.
So what you... expect from a Guy Ritchie movie that isn't Aladdin mm-hmm. or
King Arthur
or
Swept Away.
What was the one with Madonna? Swept Away.
Yeah.
What you expect from a traditional Guy Ritchie film is, you know, cheeky gangsters.
Right.
You know, saying funny stuff to each other.
Flash jobs.
Flirting with each other in subtle or incredibly not subtle ways.
Say covert or overt.
And very, very bad behavior.
Yes.
That is often treated comedically.
Yes. But also you have some characters who have a sense of honor and others who do not.
Correct. And that's what this film is.
Yeah. He's playing the hits after doing several movies that aren't Guy Ritchie movies.
There are a couple films in the Guy Ritchie universe that I really love. Rock and Rolla.
Yep.
And Snatch.
Never seen it.
And those films are from, you know, it seems weird to say this now, but they are from kind of a different era.
Well,
in his filmmaking, you know, life and in the life of the culture.
He was one of those sort of post-Tarantino filmmakers that emerged in the late 90s that was like, you know, telling these crime stories with a sense of humor, with these convoluted plots, with like flash and panache and, you know, the occasional like, oh, I'm a white guy, but I'm going to make these, you know, jokes about like race or sexuality or whatever. And, you know, just barely skating on the thin ice of getting away with it. You know,
I want to talk about the race.
That is a
stuff
thing
that
here.
Takes place in this film.
Yeah.
It is not complicated. It is thoughtless and lazy.
Yes.
Because what happens in the first half of the film is that there are two characters, Hugh Grant's character and Colin Farrell's character, who both engage in dialogue that is racist or at least racism adjacent.
Yeah, racially questionable.
The Hugh Grant's character is absolutely racist.
Yes.
There's no getting, you know.
He comes right out with it.
He comes right out with it.
And he's also a character that the movie
understands to be despicable.
Yes.
Then there is the Colin Farrell character, who is known as Coach, and who he's a boxing coach.
Yeah.
And, you know, everyone in his world sort of digs him, and he is like a straight shooter, and, you know.
The guys in the gym are, you know, multicultural. They represent, you know, a variety of races.
Someone in the gym says something racist to a black boxer.
Mm-hmm. Played by Bugsy Malone.
Can I just say something?
What?
Bugsy Malone is a perfect hip-hop name.
It's, yeah.
Because, first of all, he spells it with a Z.
Uh-huh.
Secondly, it's so British a thing, because the American film, Bugsy Malone...
Yeah, well, Alan Parker directed it.
Sure.
That's fine. American film, yes.
Put out by an American studio, you know, British director, but whatever. Not one person I know saw that film in the United States. Huge hit in the UK, though.
Yes.
Yeah. And so culturally relevant there. And so for him to... Are you finished fixing the cords making all kinds of racket while I'm explicating about the cinema?
I know. The people I know who've seen that movie are either Jodie Foster or Paul Williams completists.
Yeah. I just love that that's what he decided his name was going to be. Okay, so anyway... Colin Farrell
might say he's a childish Gambino.
Yes. One might.
You love my jokes.
I'm slowly getting to the point here. Colin Farrell defends the use of two... Well, I can't say what the guy said to him, but it's not the N-word.
No.
I
think you should just...
It's the C-word, which, another little digression here. If you were having a drinking game about the C word in this movie,
alcohol poisoning,
you would die of alcohol. Again, the C word in the UK is
not the same,
something entirely different than it is in the United States.
Yes.
Continuing.
Well, I think
then Colin Farrell defends the use.
You should explain what it is, since you've already said the C word.
Because he calls him a black C.
C, yes.
And the...
And Colin Farrell says he's not saying...
He's racist, and Colin Farrell says he's not because he's your friend and this is affectionate and...
Because he's not saying you're a C because you're black. He's saying you're black and a C.
Right. Now, for the sake of ease, let's just call Colin Farrell's commentary and character also... a racist character, and also a racist commentary.
Right.
Now, you can decide you're going to argue with that, but that's not what we're doing here right now.
Right.
Because in no matter what side you come down on whether or not his character is racist or not, I think this falls under the heading of depiction is not endorsement.
Right.
Okay. But then...
Yeah.
For no good reason at all, other than to do the tired thing of, aren't Chinese names funny? They introduce a minor yet plot-relevant character whose name is spelled P-H-U-C.
Yeah.
And then the film proceeds to just dig in and grind
and
on
elbow
that,
you in the ribs about
and
that.
And grind
one.
On that joke. And I'm like... Hey, that joke ain't funny, and because it's not even clever or innovative.
It is of the Long Duck Dong school
of
English speaking
humor. Yes, absolutely, and because other characters who have not been depicted as racist, overtly racist, personally racist characters
within the film.
They're the ones who start in on it.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, now your movie is racist.
Yeah.
Because Guy Ritchie, you wrote a joke that is now racist in your movie. And now it exists in this world, this uninterrogated world.
Right.
That is built on structural racism. And so now your movie's an example of that.
Yes.
So irritated.
There's almost maybe a way to defend the Colin Farrell joke as like a commentary upon or like
sure,
what, you know,
maybe
I mean, we're being cheeky.
But again, like I said, we're not.
But yeah, but that's.
I'm not here to tell you what to think about
but
that.
But then yeah, they
but
go.
But I am here to tell you what to think about this PHUC
yes,
joke.
That is
non-joke,
indefensible. And again, this is I think part of the post-Tarantino-ness of. Guy Ritchie, because Tarantino continues to be, I get to say the N-word and all that stuff with his nonsense, which is, I think, often, I would say he's rarely defensible in his movies. And Ritchie runs with the same thing.
I want Guy Ritchie, as a filmmaker, to evolve and continue and grow.
Yeah.
I want him to not be overtly knuckleheaded about this. But
you want to see a Bad Boys 3 after his Bad Boys 2.
I don't know what I want.
Not that necessarily, but you talked about how like Bad Boys 2 was pretty overtly homophobic and by 3 we think Will Smith's kids were like
Will Smith's kids are like, stop that. I do have other thoughts about Guy Ritchie's relationship to for lack of a better word, marginalized groups of people. His approach to race is screwed up.
Yeah.
But his approach to queerness has always sort of filled me with glee. Because
he lets it be on the table.
Not only is it on the table, sometimes it's overt, sometimes it's subtle. And always, even if the men in the room are heterosexuals, they are treating each other with the most tenderly flirtatious dialogue and care
sure.
for each other in a way that halfway through this movie, I thought, you know what? From now on, if you're a heterosexual male friend of mine, I'm just going to refer to you as darling or love, because that's how they all talk to each other. And it makes me happy. So this is now a filmmaker who is a completely mixed bag of problems and
delights.
And I wish he would get it together for the next phase of his career, because I cannot recommend this film, with the exception of Lady Mary sounding like Jason Statham through the entire movie.
Here's the thing, though. I have to say, this movie is, for as convoluted as it is edited in such a way that it is just brisk and constantly moving, and it constantly kept me engaged with it. I think Hugh Grant is giving a great performance. He's having a great time doing this.
He is.
And
he's gotten to the point in his career where he knows that being a rat bastard is the best way for him to go, because everybody already now talks about how he is in real life being that way.
True.
And so
you can't put that back in the bag.
Yeah, you might as well just go with that.
Yeah.
You know.
I think a lesser movie would have made him despicable just because he's gay and hitting on a straight guy.
Right.
This movie makes him despicable because he's despicable and because he is so lecherously hitting on Charlie Hunnam in a way that is just like, read the room.
But you can't read the room, because there's no indication of what Charlie Hunnam's character's sexuality is.
Right.
He may very well be queer.
And just not interested
in Hugh Grant being rotten, you know. You don't know. And because it is a Guy Ritchie film, anything could be.
This is true. I do want to say I endorse bearded Charlie Hunnam and bearded Colin Farrell.
Okay.
Those are good looks.
Well, you know, coming from a man with a beard, would be your preference.
I'm not objectifying them.
Coming from a man who loves beards, it would also be my preference.
I'm just saying, consider this in the future, gentlemen. It's working.
please enjoy what you have done with your face.
For your consideration.
Keep going. Keep going with that. Yeah. So this is not a good film. But there are
good elements
that unfortunately cannot make me forget the stink of this stuff that's in it. How do you do these two parts feel the same to Guy Ritchie? Does he think it's all one thing? That's my question, and I don't know the answer. Does he think that a racist character and his own racist joke
cancel each other out?
But that they are equally all right?
I don't know. I don't know what he's thinking.
Because, racist characters are legitimate.
Sure.
But the other stuff is
There's a difference between presenting a person who is a racist and then presenting a point of view that the movie is seemingly endorsing that is racist.
I saw someone on Twitter this week say, there are no good white people. There are only racist white people and anti-racist white people. And you know what? This movie makes me think that they're right. So there you go.
I have seen it said that it's not enough to be, that you have to be aggressively anti-racist.
Yeah.
It's not enough to just be like, I'm not a racist.
You can't just be, I'm okay, not me. Yeah. You know, it was a family circus.
Yeah, not family me. Circus. I don't
not
know.
Me. I don't know.
But yeah, exquisitely crafted, but
yes,
sunk from, by its
from
own.
Well-tailored crime people to
Macedonian bee farmers,
Macedonian beekeeping, Honeyland.
Yes,
from filmmakers. I'm gonna remember these names: Lubomir Stefanov and Tamara Kotevska. They went to the mountains of Macedonia, which is a little country in southeastern Europe, Yugoslavia area.
Right, the former Yugoslavia.
The Balkans. There is one big capital city, and then a lot of dirt roads, it would appear. And so in this this very remote, isolated region, lives a woman in her 50s who is sort of like the last of the old school beekeepers.
Yes.
She does this in a very like non-intrusive, you know.
She doesn't keep apiaries. She goes to where the bees are.
She goes to where the bees are and sort of
harvests the honey, but
sings to them.
Yeah.
She blows the smoke, obviously, to keep them from, you know, getting on her. But, you know, her family's been doing this forever. And you know, she's the last one. She tends to her 85-year-old mother, who is sick and in bed all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And otherwise, there is no one else in this little stone hut that they live in.
Yeah, and seemingly no one else living nearby.
Nobody living nearby either. Yeah.
Until
an itinerant Turkish family.
Yeah.
Who would be almost, like, comedic in their bumbling and Three Stooges-like, like, bonk you in the head sort of antics.
Manner of farming.
If they weren't so angry and violent with each other all the time, and it's upsetting to watch. They roll in. They've got their caravan. It's a mom and a dad and seven kids.
I lost count.
And a herd of cattle.
Yes.
And they roll right in. They set up shop right next to her.
Mm-hmm.
Right next to the woman whose name is
Hatice.
And then they just ruin her life.
Yeah, because then they start...
She tries to make friends with them.
Yes, she reaches out. She's being friendly.
She's really good to the kids, you know, showing the kids how to do the beekeeping the way she does it.
Yes. And one of the sons, like, listens to her and wants to learn this stuff.
Right.
But the dad keeps insisting that he knows best and he knows what to do.
Right.
And of course, he screws everything up.
Yeah.
For not only for his own family, but for her as well.
They ruin their own livelihood.
Yeah.
I won't even tell you exactly how this all happens. But and then they screw up her business too.
Yeah.
And I'm like...
It's very tense. It's like watching...
It's extremely tense.
It's like watching a documentary about small-town America, and then Walmart shows up. Like, it's just like,
right.
You know they're going to sweep in, ruin everything, and then leave.
Right. And in spite of all this, like, tension and unhappiness and, you know, domestic violence, which is based in desperation.
Yeah.
You know. Of not having any other options.
Right.
Of being, you know, discriminated against because you're poor. So that sort of forces you out into the country and into, you know, a life where you struggle and scrape to get by doing whatever it is you think you know about farming.
Right. And also, raising. As people who are the object of discrimination, are we meant to read this family as Roma?
She says they're Turkish.
Okay.
And I don't know what...
I don't know if you could be both, I think. I don't know. It's hard to say. Like, they are definitely itinerant. They show up with, like, a camper van.
Right.
It's being towed and, you know. But, yeah, I just didn't know if that was an element of their sort of nomadicness.
It is squalor and sadness and, you know, there's no education happening to speak of. And it's... A harsh, harsh life
existence
that is being depicted in the film.
Right.
In fact, so harsh that you begin to think that Hatice, the lone woman with her mom, like that she's kind of got it together.
Yeah.
Like she knows who she is.
She's self-sufficient.
She knows what she's doing. She ekes out a living, but it is a living.
Yeah.
And she doesn't seem especially unhappy.
Yeah.
She's worried about the future. Her mother's going to die soon. And, you know, what will happen to her being alone out there.
Right.
But
she doesn't seem like she's being ground to dust by the way her life is. She gets up in the morning. She does her stuff. She goes to town. She sells the honey. You know, like...
But whereas that's the case with her.
Yeah.
The family that moves in next to her, they're miserable.
Yeah, they're constantly...
Always miserable. They're
struggling.
They're constantly struggling and fighting, and things are going wrong for them.
And blaming each other for
blaming
when things
each other
wrong.
And then, you know, you know, screwing her over to sort of
make a quick buck.
So this is at the same time a quiet and beautiful film.
Yeah.
About just the struggle for survival and existence.
And about man and nature.
You know? And about the way that people, you know, interact with the natural world for better or worse.
Mm.
What I like most about it is that in spite of the fact that I'm watching this movie thinking, I hate that family, get them out of here.
Sting them more, bees.
Go, yeah, the bees are stinging all of them. Like, good, leave. Like, stop bothering the beekeeping lady.
Who knows what she's doing?
In spite of that, as I'm watching the movie, I'm thinking, ugh. You and I just had an extremely difficult and bothersome neighbor move out of our building.
Mm.
And the sense of relief that we felt from that is what I sort of wished for her. I was like, come on, just go. Look, there's another hill over there.
Go bother somebody else.
And there's no one over there. Like, just go. Why do you have to come right next to her and ruin her livelihood? As much as I felt that gut, like, y'all are bad and go away, the film does not judge anyone.
No, it's very...
And that is to its credit.
It's beyond the
wall.
I'm
a terrible person who is very judgmental, and I want people who are intentionally screwing around with other people's lives to get lost.
And I think, you know, I think also this is one of those things where the documentary people were just following her.
Right.
And like, they had no idea
that another family was going to show
exactly.
up.
Exactly. And so, you know, I think what they wound up with, sort of, you know, through the sort of magical alchemy that happens in documentary filmmaking, is this sort of metaphor about like short-sightedness when it comes to the environment. You know, a big reason that a lot of things go wrong is because you're supposed to leave half of the honey for the bees to live on, and the new family doesn't, and so their bees go kill her bees to get their honey, and it's like, you've ruined it for everybody in the pursuit of, like, making a quick cash grab right now and not looking at the long view.
And then you almost sort of, like, you stop and think and become thoughtful for 2 seconds out of your life, which is...
a challenge.
Which is sometimes a challenge. you think, well, you know, who's going to feed those kids?
Yeah, no, I get it.
If he doesn't get that money, who's going to feed those kids? Because there's like 7 kids and they're all starving.
Of course.
So
yeah, you're right. I mean, the movie is, I think, I don't even want to say compassionate. I think it is maybe it's dispassionate. It just sort of lets you see what happens and you can draw your own conclusions. It is the first film to be nominated simultaneously as Best Documentary Feature and Best International Feature. It is North Macedonia's Oscar entry.
First anything, really,
First nomination, I think, might even be their first entry.
Yeah.
I'm not sure on that one. But yeah, this is the first time that, like, docs have been nominated for Best Foreign Film, but then they've never been also nominated for Best Doc in the same year.
So yeah, this movie put me through all kinds of feelings.
And it's 89 minutes.
It's short. But here's the other thing I was thinking about, not related at all to the high quality of this.
Mm-hmm. The cinematography is stunning.
It's gorgeous.
And there are shots where you're like, how did they even get
do that? Yeah. I'm curious about Neon, the distributor.
Mm-hmm.
And I know this got bought at last year's Sundance.
About a month after Sundance, it won like 3 awards at Sundance. It was a big hit there.
I'm curious of how a company like Neon says, yeah, we can sell this.
Yeah.
Because they're not tiny anymore. Like, they've got resources.
Sure.
They can push things through.
Yeah.
They can have movies in theaters that are, you know, high profile.
Yeah, they've got Parasite.
And they turned this into a high-profile thing. Like, this played at the Arclight here in town. Mm-hmm. It played at the Landmark. It made the rounds.
Yeah.
But on a filmmaking level, this is absolutely the kind of movie that I would expect to come from Cinema Guild.
Mm-hmm. Grasshopper.
Grasshopper. Any of the, like...
first-run features.
Any of the sort of, like, serious-minded, high-quality,
Strand,
micro sort of distributors out there. Like, why this and not, well, the film I talked about last week in the year end. Why this instead of Milford Graves' Full Mantis, which, by the way, is on Canopy.
It is.
I just found that out yesterday. Yes. So that's my pick of the week for you. that's my DVD pick. Go to Canopy if you've got it. It is Milford Graves' Full Mantis is streaming right now on nice. Canopy. Free jazz drummer.
Well, I suspect that even with all the Sundance Awards under its belt, you could probably get a North Macedonian beekeeping documentary for a fairly low rate.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm sure they were looking at the long game of like, this thing, we can have, this will have some presence at the Oscars. And that in turn is going to make it a more valuable commodity in.
Do you think they had that vision? Do you think they thought we could make this an Oscar nominee?
Yeah, I think so. Because I don't know what else. That's all I can think of that would be from a purely business point of view.
Right.
I think they thought, yeah, if we can get this some Oscar traction, then it becomes something that, you know, has more of a life in home video and streaming and, you know, yada da. And I think the fact that it did that well at Sundance among more than one jury probably gave them some inkling that it would play to American audiences.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, American documentary audiences. And they're, you know, which is a niche, but it's out there and it can be a lucrative one.
Yeah, you're right. It strikes me as...
No, it is... Like, on the one hand, it's like, really? Wow.
This one, but not the other one.
You thought this was going to... Okay. And they were... It paid off.
It's clear. I mean, it's a great film. It's just sort of like... How are you going to market this?
Yeah.
How are you going to tell people about this?
Right.
So that they are thinking, oh yeah, I'll spend $15 on a ticket to that.
Yeah.
I
think the fact that it's 89 minutes is probably a selling point. Because if Frederick Wiseman had made this, you know, it'd be 4 hours long. And it'd be great. But it would be, you know, that's a movie that...
Well, you know, it could have been 4 hours long too, because they were shooting for 3 years.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway. Honeyland. Is it available to be seen anywhere right now? Like, as, you know, streaming or anything like that?
I'm not sure where it is in its run. Yeah, it is rentable in all the places. Amazon, Vudu, YouTube. Oh, and it's on Hulu.
Oh, all right.
It is on Hulu, so you can watch it on Hulu.
Yeah. You can also watch American Factory on
Netflix.
The internet or on your streaming service.
Well, only on Netflix. It's because they acquired it.
American Factory is another Oscar-nominated documentary.
Mm-hmm.
And it is set in Dayton, Ohio. Who are the filmmakers?
It's Julia Reichert's.
Okay, yeah.
And Stephen Bogner.
Yeah.
And Julia Reichert is, you know, kind of a doc legend. She hasn't, you know, her movies aren't necessarily like, you know, she's not Michael Moore, but like among people who follow nonfiction filmmaking, like she's a very big deal, and this is a big breakout for her. It's set in Dayton, Ohio, where this Chinese company called Fuyao,
Fuyao,
reopens the GM plant that has closed. Promising, you know, jobs for everybody and, you know, this is going to be a great investment. And, you know, the town obviously is filled with all these people who were laid off when the GM plant closed. So mm-hmm. They're excited about going back to work. And then the inevitable culture clash occurs in terms of what the Chinese expect from the Americans and what the Americans expect from the Chinese.
Yep.
And the sort of, I mean, the corporate cultures, I'd say, clash more than anything.
The workers on the floor... I'll get along fine.
Yes.
They try and communicate with each other as best they can. Lots of the Chinese workers do not speak English very well, if at all. And only one of the American employees
speaks Chinese. I think so.
Speaks Chinese. Speaks, I guess it's Mandarin. They're speaking Mandarin. So it's not that. It's not like,
it's not an individual clash.
It's not about workers and xenophobia. It's about cultural corporate expectations.
Yes.
Which quite often mesh very well with American corporate expectations.
True.
But at certain levels, at certain moments, different points of, you know, corporate conduct, you begin to see the very stark differences.
Yes.
Between what a company in China will expect of its rank and file employees,
right,
and what an American company would look at and say, well, no, we can't do that.
Yeah, that's against the law.
Right.
You know, we can't just move the fire alarm because you think it's in the wrong place.
Yeah, like,
there are regulations.
There are OSHA regulations for this.
You know, we are told at one point that, like, you know, the American workers talk about the Chinese workers, like, dumping paint down the sewer.
Yeah.
You know, and
because there, I don't know what kind of laws there are about this in China, but there are laws about that here.
They are not famous for their environmental regulations.
I see.
Ask anybody about the air quality in Shanghai. But yeah, so it's, you know, it's a documentary where they went in not really knowing what was going to happen. They wanted to document this thing of this Chinese company coming in and, like, providing opportunity to American workers. And then they follow the story to where it goes. And so, of course, then the workers, many of whom were, again, former GM workers, want to unionize. And, of course, the Chinese company is not having it,
right,
even though, ironically, China is still technically a communist country.
Yes.
And everybody who works at the Chinese plant for this company is a member of the workers' union. But their idea of a workers' union is basically to deliver to the party, you know, they're like what they want, as opposed to what an American labor union does. It's fascinating.
And the head of the workers' union is the brother-in-law of the chairman of the company.
Yes.
Yeah.
Of the Chinese workers'
union. Of the Chinese workers' union, yes. Ultimately, it's not even about culture clash, although there are those elements in the film.
Right. It's about the death of labor.
It's about the destruction of working people's lives.
Yes.
Through unregulated capitalism.
Yes.
AKA capitalism.
Greed.
And so, it's a disheartening story, because people are trapped. The Chinese workers are trapped. The American workers are trapped. The only people who are happy are the people who are high up in the corporations. And they're only happy if they're pleasing the chairman.
Right.
Because he fires people, like,
willy-nilly.
without, you know, much notice.
No.
And if he thinks they're not doing it exactly the way he wants them to. And he can.
There are moments of real, like, corporate tone deafness as well.
Yeah.
Like, in terms of how the sort of Chinese supervisors deal with the American, you know, floor workers.
Yeah.
Like, at one point, like, you know, they sort of try and use as an enticement a trip to Shanghai.
Right.
You know, in, like, a luxury hotel, and everybody's just kind of like, I would just rather be paid more, please. You
right.
know?
With good benefits.
Benefits, yeah.
It is a film about rich corporatists.
Yes.
Exploiting anyone they can.
Yeah.
Until they build robots that are competent enough to
replace them.
Eliminate the human element entirely.
Yes. And ultimately, that is, I think, one of the big under-addressed issues of the moment. Like, you know, when the president talks about bringing back, you know, the coal industry or whatever, which
right.
is never going to happen. But, you know, when we talk about, like, you know, blue-collar laborers, like factory workers and that kind of thing, so many of them are being replaced by automation. So many, like, you know, grocery store cashiers are being replaced by automation.
Right.
We have to figure out, well, okay, then what other jobs are y'all going to do now? Because the robots aren't going away. The robots are too profitable for the people in charge.
Right.
So rather than have you wait around for this, like, line job on an assembly line that's never going to come back, what are you going to do? And I think we need to start hearing some reasonable, realistic answers to that question.
There, in the next 10 to 20 years, there will be a massive shift in, you know, this sort of, you know, level of employment.
Yeah.
And if there isn't a radical overhauling of what corporations are allowed to do to people,
right?
Government funded training people can be can expect to get,
sure,
so they can do a job that is, you know,
a different skill set
happening now, a different skill set. Until those things happen,
yeah,
you know, this has nothing to do with this movie exactly,
yeah,
but you know, it's time for the guaranteed basic income is really what it is.
Yes.
And that's something that some, you know, Western industrialized countries have.
Mm-hmm.
The United States does not.
No.
But if this continues like this, mm-hmm, with folks who would normally be working in factories across the United States, manufacturing jobs, if they've got nowhere to go, you know, there have to become programs to make it an easier transition into a different job.
Right. Yeah, that's valid.
Green New Deal, y'all.
Yes. Exactly.
Jobs.
Get jobs making windmills or whatever the heck.
So again, just like Honeyland, this is a movie about having a hard life.
Yeah.
And I recently watched Harlan County, USA on TCM.
Right.
And the back-to-back of those two.
Oh, man.
Of that film and this. The organizing, you know, situation in Harlan County, USA was just fraught with horrifying violence.
Yeah.
I mean, people actually die.
Right. In American Factory, they just bring in consultants to tell you why the union's going to ruin your life.
You got to go to mandatory meetings.
Yeah.
Three of them.
Yeah.
All from the same consulting firm, mm-hmm, to explain to you, and by explain to you, I mean absolutely bald-faced lie to you.
Right.
About how unions lower wages and benefits.
Yes.
Like, when did that happen? You might not always get what you want from your current contract, but yeah, you're going to get something, you know. They even put in a clause where they aren't allowed to union. They aren't even allowed to organize for being in a union. I think this is in, that happens in Harlan County, USA.
Okay, yeah.
And then they go back out on strike again to get that put back in the contract. So, like, the lessons that we all thought we learned from the labor movement of the early 20th century and the late 19th century, we have to keep relearning.
We have to do a do-over of the 20th century, thanks to the ruling class, because they've managed to completely destroy organized labor, and somehow we've got fascism on the rise again. It's like, right. I thought we settled this before! Incidentally, if you saw the movie, the documentary Bathtubs Over Broadway on our recommendation, there is a moment in American Factory where some of the people go to China and they are treated to a corporate musical.
Oh, yeah. It's something to look at.
And their jaws are agape.
But then the American workers all get up and perform the YMCA dance.
Yeah.
That's sort of like a, and now you've done this for us, we're going to do the YMCA dance for you.
It's a moment. Real quick, I wanted to mention a movie that just premiered at the Sundance. I did not go to Sundance this year, so I don't have my usual annual report of what I saw.
Somebody went to Tacoma and ate in a nice restaurant.
I did. I'll talk about that on Linoleum Knife and Fork, another Patreon show. But we did get to see, I got to see a couple of things in advance, one of which Dave and I both saw, and we'll talk about it more when it's going to premiere on HBO in June. But the film's called Welcome to Chechnya. It's the latest movie from David France, who did How to Survive a Plague and The Death and Life of Marsha P. Johnson. And it is about the brutal regime in Chechnya that is torturing and murdering LGBT people, and about the efforts of activists to get them out of the country.
Yeah.
It is a tough
sit. To rescue queer people and get them out of Chechnya.
And Russia entirely, because Putin is backing all of this.
Yeah.
It is a tough sit, but it is a very powerful film, and I highly recommend it. You can go read my full review of The Wrap, but Dave and I will talk about it in June when it comes on HBO and everybody gets a chance to see it. So your streaming pick this week then is Milford Graves' Full Mantis.
Yes, it's documentary week here okay. on Linoleum Knife.
On Canopy. Mine is, the other film that I saw that we'll, for Sundance that we'll talk about in a couple weeks when it opens theatrically is, I saw Downhill, which is the American remake of Force Majeure. I highly recommend that you see Force Majeure first.
Yeah.
And it is streaming on Hulu and on Canopy, so you can watch it in either of those places. And I think it will... It will color the way you look at Downhill, for sure. We have some letters.
Yeah, apparently. Where are they?
Gee, Dave, maybe in your inbox?
I can't see them. They're not... You know, here they are. Here they are.
10 years, everybody.
A fellow... Listen, I had to just do a little scrolling. I got a lot of emails after the ones you sent me. William Sonoma's having a sale.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah.
How unusual.
I won't be buying anything from them, but, you know, they're having a sale. They've informed me. There's no name on this.
Okay, well, name redacted says.
Okay. Been loving the podcast for about a year now. But I kept putting off sending a message until one of your latest episodes when you talked about lumbar cushions. Sparked my interest as a 23-year-old
wow.
who suffered extreme sciatica until recently when I changed a lot of my bad habits, crossing my legs, driving too long, sitting on floors, and still sometimes wakes up after sleeping more than 8 hours with severe pain. Yeah. I feel Dave's pain.
Mm.
Honestly, I'm now considering asking for a lumbar pillow as a gift for when I visit my friend whose only seating option is wooden kitchen chairs, and also to help for during the school year. So your talk actually kind of inspired me towards that. I love the casual nature of your podcast.
Oh, good thing.
And I recommend it. Exactly. If you didn't, you wouldn't have listened for a full year. I got a lovely... Listen, I'm interrupting this letter. I got a lovely compliment from our friend Nayland, who was visiting here this weekend. And they said... that we are a hangout podcast.
Aww.
Which is, that made me very happy.
Well, like, thank you, Nayland.
Yeah, we're like the Richard Linklater movie of podcasts.
Before podcasts.
Your film recommendations are always really insightful. You're right. They are.
Stop.
And I love the thoughtful nature with which you approach difficult topics. I found you guys through Pop Rocket, rest in peace. Mm. And though it took a bit to subscribe to Linoleum Knife, I'm glad I did. Also, super cool to listen to a podcast with hosts who are as far left politically as you are. Because I find myself rolling my eyes a lot in real life because of the people I interact with. So podcasts have become a soothing balm. I'm always excited to see a new episode on the feed. Keep up the great work. I'll tell you something.
Thank you.
You and I live in a world of our own creation. Like, neither one of us have office jobs.
Right.
We interact with other writers, you know, editors,
we're in that,
filmmakers.
We're in that Pauline Kael bubble where she was like, how did Nixon become president? Nobody I know voted for
right.
him.
Like, I don't have to go to an office every day and listen to wild right-wing people talk about things, or people who have like really muddled, mixed ideas about, like, you know, I hate immigrants, but I love Medicare for all. And I'm like, you why? You know, like that kind of biting your tongue.
When I do work in an office, it's an outfest, and usually I'm like...
Right. You're
like,
the old guy.
I'm the old guy, so right. Everybody's politics is probably leftier than mine. You know?
Thank God. If the new generations aren't going to be pushing everyone forward,
yeah,
then what good are they?
Indeed. Well, thank
keep
you.
Keep it together, kids.
Thank you, name redacted.
Keep hammering on the olds.
I hope your sciatica improves.
Me too. Boy, so this whole, like, because I got like 30 emails after you sent these to me, I keep having to
Sheesh, aren't you
scroll
popular?
down. Well, you know who else is having a sale?
Who?
Gelson's, the supermarket down the road.
Ooh.
25% off organic chicken. This is the only emails I get.
Food related.
LL Bean's got a flannel clearance going on.
We are nothing if not on brand. Noah.
Noah's back.
Yes, after being a non-listener, he's a listener.
A non-listener or a non-writer of letters?
No, a non-listener for a while.
Oh, really?
He told us he kind of peaced out on us, but now he's back.
I forgot that that happened. I just thought that Noah had become quiet.
Does that sound like Noah?
I'm so happy that Noah has returned. Well, it's a list.
Yes.
Yeah. Hi, it's been a minute. I'm at a top 25 list, but I'm just going to send you all the top 10. I know the rules.
Good. This is 2019.
2019, yeah. A Peterloo.
Yeah.
Parenthetically, why did people ignore this? You know what? I haven't seen
it
yet.
Yeah, we didn't see it either.
Yeah.
We should.
I got to catch up.
It's on Amazon Prime.
So you're getting the benefit of the doubt that it's great.
Yes.
Since I know that what you're about to get here is a proper knifing.
Oh, okay. Come on. Number 9.
Portrait of a Lady on Fire.
Oh, heck yeah.
Yep. Transit. Come on, Alonso. Come on.
I'll allow it, but I'm not a fan.
Atlantics.
Yeah.
Amazing Grace, which
people
aren't talking about. Is it because it's an old movie? Like, does it not count as a 2019? It's a 2019 film.
Yeah,
right?
I think there's a combination of things. It came out early in the year. There's some question about, like, who we even credit it. Because, like, when it went out, Sidney Pollack's name appears nowhere in the credits.
Right.
And he was the original, director of this thing.
No, I know.
Yeah, I don't know. Or I think there's this notion that, like, you know, concert films don't really count as documentaries or some nonsense. I don't know. It is great. It's a great, great movie.
It's so, so incredible. A Hidden Life.
We haven't seen it yet.
Haven't watched it yet, I know. The Irishman.
Mm-hmm.
Marriage Story.
Mm-hmm.
Once Upon a Time. Ellipsis. In Hollywood.
Again, I'll allow it, but I have some qualms.
Okay, so we've taken three points off each for you and your discontent
with
Transit and Once Upon a Time.
I'm going to let them through because they're legit movies and a lot of people really liked them. And,
I mean, I have problems with Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, too, as we discussed on the episode.
Yes, I have problems with both films, but, like, I am not going to begrudge anybody putting them on a top 10 list.
And number 1, Little Women.
Well chosen.
So is this list 95% knife or 100% knife?
I'm happy to make it 100%.
Noah, you're still 100% knife with us.
In our hearts.
Says he's going to be going to NYU this fall.
Oh, congratulations.
Yeah. A little sort of addendum at the end.
Mm-hmm.
That's cool.
Nice.
Thank you, Noah. Glad to have you back.
Indeed. Take us to New York. In your earbuds.
Seth says, wait, is this an LK letter?
Yes.
About Oklahoma?
Yes, we talked about it on Oklahoma.
You're right, we did.
Yeah.
I saw the most recent revival of Oklahoma, and let me tell you, I have seen many Broadway shows in my lifetime, and this was one of the best. There's a reason... this has worked for over 75 years. The newest production is by far the darkest, but also probably the most honest. The production brings out all of the isms that were going to be in the blood-soaked plains, and by the end, literally blood-soaked.
Huh.
That were going on in the blood-soaked plains.
Right.
Everything that may have been perceived as radical in this production was already there in the book.
Hmm.
Unfortunately, the production just closed, but I highly recommend the cast recording, where there is definitely more of a country sound from its 7-piece band, and it also contains the best version of I'm Just a Girl Who Can't Say No ever.
Huh.
And yes, the vegetarian chili and cornbread was amazing.
Yeah, will the touring show have the chili? That is my question.
It better, right?
One would hope.
It has to.
I would.
That's part of the, listen, you're getting dinner in a show.
Yeah. part of the mise-en-scene.
You ain't got to go to Chipotle before this, before this Oklahoma. Just come on in. You can get chili and cornbread. Oh, and anybody who doesn't want their chili and cornbread, I'll eat your chili and cornbread for you. That is what I will do.
Indeed. We have a five-star review.
We have a five-star review.
Hooray.
Which is the only kind of review that I accept. Just in case you were wondering.
Yes.
If you were thinking of leaving us a review.
Five stars.
Five stars. Don't you bring me nothing else. You don't like us? I don't want to hear no one-star review. You just go away silently.
Don't nobody bring me no bad news.
Yeah. This is from Connor. David Alonso are funny and thoughtful. Lots of great movie insight. Now, that is the short, sweet five-star review.
Yes. Doesn't have to be an essay. Just hop on, say you like the show and why, and boom.
Five stars.
You're done. Thank you, Connor. We appreciate it. And, you know, yeah, you should please leave us that five-star review at Apple Podcasts, and we will read it on the show. You can also leave us positive feedback in the many places that we stream, like Stitcher Radio and Google Play and Spotify and whatnot. Guys, I've mentioned it before. We have a Patreon.
Yeah, we do.
Patreon.com/linoleumknife. And we offer just all kinds of very cool stuff, starting at as low as $1 a month. And above that...
Can I tell people what they're about to start getting at the dollar level?
Not yet. We have an announcement coming soon. We're about to hit our fourth anniversary?
Fourth or fifth, I can't remember.
Fourth,
anymore.
I think. Our fourth anniversary, yeah. On Patreon. We will be shaking up what you get in a way that will be...
happy making for more people.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely. So at the moment, if you're at the $1 level, you get our daily
a
LKRX.
Sticker and LKRX.
Where we recommend stuff. There's more to come. So now's a good time to become at least a dollar member, if not higher. Above that, we offer whole other shows like LKTV, a podcast of the television, Linoleum Knife and Fork, a food podcast hosted by two film critics, Linoleum Nights, our... live and somewhat blue take on current events. And
real
whatnot.
Blue. I say all the swears.
All of them. He's broken every human law.
Yep.
also merch, also individualized episodes and club hangouts and all kinds of stuff. So patreon.com/linoleumknife. Check it out. Also, check out our friends on the internet. Go to the Critically Acclaimed Network and see what Bibbs and Whitney are up to. Listen to Schmoes Know, Dennis Anyone with Dennis Hensley, The Comics Canon, All Things Cozy, Sewers of Paris, Deck the Hallmark, My Big Fat Gay Podcast, or The Big Fat Gay Podcast? The Big Fat Gay Podcast.
All right.
Criterion Cast, Fat Guys of the Movies, Secretly Timid. Again, leave us that review on Apple Podcasts or wherever it is that you listen to this show. You can follow us on social media at Linoleum Cast on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Thank you, Blue, for our theme music. BLEU, go listen to his stuff. He's incredibly talented, and I'm a big fan. And of course, you can drop us a line at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com with questions or comments or your own top 10 lists. We will get to them at some point. sorry we were late this
maybe.
Week.
Maybe.
We should be back on schedule starting this weekend, so...
We're back on schedule now.
Well, you know, people... We are a lot of people's Monday morning thing, and we're recording right. This on Tuesday morning, so,
I know.
You know, it's a little off.
I know.
Anyway.
You were in an airplane.
Thank you for listening, you lovely, lovely people. Until next time.
Goodbye.